Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
So you're at Tax Tuesday. If you're looking to hear some stuff about taxes, you're in the right place. If you want to hear about GameStop, well, not so much. There we go. There you are. So we have a whole bunch of you guys. All right. Such a good sport, Jeff. You just have to sit there and deal with my shenanigans. All right. So, hey, we got people from all over the place. You guys are telling me where you are. Say, hey, put in where you're from. We do want to hear about GME and AMC. Do you want to learn about a short squeeze? We could talk about short squeezes today, although everybody's an expert in it now. Look at that. Greensboro, North Carolina, San Francisco, Napa, Buffalo, Austin, LA, Oklahoma, sunny Fort Lauderdale. Now they're going through too fast. Alexandria, Fremont. I'll try to pick them up. Boston, Massachusetts, Austin, Washington State. Where in Washington State, Ann? We need to know. Kapolei. I'm jealous. Boca Raton, San Diego, College Park, Maryland, Incline Village. Oh, so somebody's skiing. Oregon, Fenton, Jacksonville base. Oh, so we got people from all over the place. We usually have a pretty good showing on Tax Tuesdays. I know it's not tax season, but we still have people showing up.
Yep, and it's getting close.
Nice hat.
Thank you.
Actually, that was a horrible, barely true. All right, so we have, look at that. We got Portland, Quakaki, Pennsylvania. Who else sold GME at $500 a share? I bought one share and I'm just going to hold it forever until it's worth nothing. And then I could say that I too was part of the resistance. It's like, if you guys don't know what's going on, GameStop, you borrow it from somebody, you sell it, and then you have to replace it. And if it goes way up in value, then you have to replace it at a higher price. If it goes down in value, you can buy it back for less than what you sold it for, and you get to keep the difference. There it is. Done. And you can borrow lots of shares. You could borrow shares that, actually, I could lend you 2 shares or 3 shares, right? So they had more float out there than anybody stuff. All right. So we have lots of questions. Let's jump right on in, Jeff. Ask your questions. There's a bunch of live questions that are already popping up. Do it in the question and answer feature because we have a couple of accountants that are on our list. Let me see who's on there right now. I know that I saw Pio and Susan's on there. Matthew Moore. They're not going to answer tax questions. Patty, she'll point you in the right direction. Oh, we got Christos on.
Christos is on.
Wow. And Elliot and Pio and Tavia.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, guys. If you have tax questions, if you have bookkeeping questions, ask them. No cost. You just get answers. Can't say whether they're right answers. They're answers.
We try not to get wrong.
We'll answers. Be wrong definitively. I'm just teasing. And they're answering the questions so fast, I don't even get to read off the questions. All right. You can send in your questions. See that little Tax Tuesday down here? Let me see if I can use something other than a white ink so you can actually see it. There we go. Tax Tuesday, that's your magic email. You send stuff there. That's where we pick the questions that we answer every other week. And we also have a whole staff that goes through those questions, make sure they're getting answered to point in the right direction. We always say it's fast, fun, and informational. The idea is to give you guys a real good hour of content.
I'll let you go.
Sometimes we do an hour. Actually, I don't think we've ever done an hour. Let's see what we got. All right, questions, opening questions. What happens when you donate a business vehicle that you use Section 179 on in 2019 and 2020, and then you donate it to a nonprofit organization in 2021? Interesting question, not what you probably think. I have a rental in Phoenix, Arizona that I'm installing solar on. I've seen that I would qualify for the 26% federal tax credit as well as can take depreciation for the remaining amount of that that is being financed. Is this accurate? We'll go into that. Love solar. If I invested in Opportunity Zone last year with capital gains, I understand the taxes are deferred until 2026. Are those taxes at 2020 rates or 2026 rates? Good question. All right. I set up my medical LLC in late December. My current job had been paying me personally since April, direct deposit into my personal credit account. My latest paycheck for December's work was direct deposited to my LLC business bank account in the first week of January 2021. I just found out my current employer reported my earnings for 2020, April to present, under my LLC. What do I need to do? That's a long question, but we're going to break that one down. I picked that for a reason. It illustrates a few points. I own a 501c3. No, you don't.
That's the first thing I said when I saw that.
Nobody owns it, right? Nobody owns it. It's the public's, but you control it. But I get your point. And I pay my daughter with W-2 to do some of the work. Perfect. Fantastic. This 501c3 is tax exempt. Do I need to file form 941 employer's quarterly tax return and form 940 employer's annual unemployment federal tax return, or should my daughter simply file her personal tax by using the W-2 I created? Good question. Another fun one. I'm selling a house that I inherited. I'm on Social Security disability, so SSD. Will the sale of the house affect my status? This is a good question. I know it's not our typical, since we're usually dealing with just investor and business questions, but still it's something people should understand. So we'll go into that. How does a partner report outside basis on a tax return? As soon as I saw this, Jeff, I pulled it just because for you.
Thank you.
Right. For example, a surviving spouse gets the stepped up basis of her deceased spouse's partnership interest in a general partnership. Do they now? Right. The surviving spouse's basis is higher stepped up than the other partners in the partnership. 401k CARES Act distribution reporting. I put the CARES Act request in on 12/28. 2020, received CARES Act check on 1/12/21, then deposited the check on 1/14/21. So the timeline is they put in a request, they get the check a couple weeks later. Now the question is, do I report the CARES Act funds on my 2020 tax return or on my 2021? Good question. We'll dive into it. I have a single family house I bought as a primary resident in 2019. In 2020, I rented it out. In 2019, there were legal fees, closing costs. So when they first bought it, can I now claim these fees as improvements to raise my cost basis? We'll dive into this one. I have other rentals that I've had for 6+ years and never claim the closing costs. How, when can I ever claim to up my basis? Really good question, and probably something you guys, there's a lot of folks that I think will be impacted by this one. Will help a lot of folks. All right. I bought a house in 1998, lived in it for 2 years, then moved and turned the house into a rental. I wish I knew what I know now. Probably they wanted to sell it. I rented it out for 20 years and then moved back in as a primary residence. What is my tax situation? Good question. Mm-hmm. It's all statute, so we're going to dive into these. So we have a lot to do now. Let's dive in. You ready?
I'm ready.
And hey, buddy. I don't know if I even said hey.
Hey.
I was like playing with screens. You guys don't see the screens everywhere, but it's just Jeff and I in a room. And
We're Toby Mathis and Jeff Webb.
We're trying to make things work. And I'm one of those guys where I'm just looking for the on button and there's no button. So
not our usual start, huh?
No, not our usual start. So, hey, Jeff. Jeff and I are like three offices away and all we ever do is nod at each other. No, we talk all the time.
Sometimes we even say, sup.
Sup. Yeah. So people still come to the office once in a while. Gosh, COVID's messy.
Yeah.
Just wreaking havoc. And unfortunately, I hate all the fear that comes out. But we're not going to talk about COVID. We're not going to talk about GameStop. We're not going to talk about Nokia, BlackBerry,
Silver.
AMC, Silver, or Doggy Coin, whatever it is, Dog Coin. Oh my God. Everybody's gotten nuts on Twitter. All right. What happens when you donate a business vehicle? So Cars for Kids, they got to you. KARS, Cars for Kids. Donate your car today. Right. What happens when you donate a business vehicle that you used for Section 179 on in 2019 and 2020, and then you donate it to a nonprofit organization in 2021? Jeff, what do you do?
Actually, if you've taken bonus or Section 179, and this is my understanding, two bad things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
One, if you've taken Section 179 and you have not gotten through that first 5 years of ownership, like in this example, you're going to have to recapture all that Section 179.
What does that mean, Jeff?
That means you're going to have to report a gain on transfer of that vehicle.
All right. So I just gave, let's put this in English. So I have a car. Let's say that I bought a car. It's going to be a beater for us, right? We bought a car for $10,000. We're going to divide it up over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take 1/5 every year, just for sake of...
For simplification.
Yep. So we have $2,000 a year that we're writing off. So we did it for 2 years. In year three, we give it away to charity. So we've taken a deduction of $4,000 of the $10,000. You're saying you have a tax hit of that $4,000.
Correct. And the whole purpose of this is the IRS doesn't want you doing exactly this, taking a huge deduction for a vehicle you just purchased, mm-hmm. then turn around and deducting it again as a contribution.
But you would get to write off the value of the vehicle.
Absolutely.
So if it's a $10,000 vehicle, still a $10,000 vehicle, yeah. I would have $4,000 of income, but I would have $10,000 of deduction.
Yes.
What if the fair market value is $6,000?
Then it is the greater of your cost or the fair market value of the vehicle.
All right. So same situation.
Yep.
I would have $4,000 income and I would have $10,000 because that's what I paid deduction. And this is where it becomes real important as to what type. Look, I can almost read what I wrote. That says 4K. I love trying to figure this stuff out. It depends on where you bought it. So if I am in a C corp, for example, mm-hmm. the rules for 2020 at least went up to 25%. I think they extended that at the end of this last year in 2020. So in 2021, you have a 25%. I know that as an individual, you get 100% deduction against your adjusted gross income. You get to do that through 2021 as well. All that means is that if you are an individual or an S corp or a partnership, so you're sole proprietor, S corp, partnership, it's going to flow under your return. You're definitely going to get to write it off. So you're going to have $4,000 of income or whatever portion you wrote off, and you're going to have a big deduction. We don't have to worry about it. Right. Sometimes we have to worry about it if it's, I mean, this is the 100% is cash. Actually, I have to think about this real quick. This may be, is this going to be the 60% AGI?
Yeah, it should be. It should still be 60%.
Yeah, it might be 60%. So you're still going to get to write it off. It's going to be on your Schedule A, and it's going to be proportionate. Now, somebody's asking a pretty good question about a personal car that was donated, then you didn't take any deduction and you're just donating personal. So you'd get an appraisal on it. And if it's less than 5,000, would you have to do the appraisal?
No.
So you would just go out there and get a Kelley Blue Book or something. If it's over 5,000, so like in their example, Jason has 4,999. You guys can't see, but somebody says, hey, what if I donated a personal car? Yeah, then you got to get the value of it.
No, if it's a donation to most nonprofits of a vehicle, they're going to turn around and auction that
and
vehicle off. So you sometimes have to wait to get that value back. That is actually what you can donate.
They're always trying to get your car. You're going to get a minimum of $500. Mm-hmm. I think you get a minimum amount. So if you have a beater, have them come get a truck that wasn't running any longer.
It wasn't really asking this question, but bonus kind of has the same situation, but for a different reason. Anytime you gift it, you're now dropping below that 50% business use mark, which means you're not eligible for bonus.
Well, 179 would make you recapture all that as income. Bonus depreciation, you wouldn't have the recapture necessarily, would you?
I think you would still have to possibly amend your old returns or something ugly like that.
Really? I thought that if you're bonus, that you're just no longer. That's going to be another question. We'll have to ask ourselves next time. Because if I have the bonus depreciation, that's one of the reasons why I'd push the bonus depreciation instead of the 179, is I wouldn't necessarily have the income recognition, would I? So it stumped the CPA. Yeah, I don't know exactly how that would be treated. We're going down rabbit holes. All right. I have a rental in Phoenix, Arizona. Really good question, by the way. Anytime you talk about solar, this illustrates a good point. I'm installing solar in my rental. And I've seen that I would qualify for a 26% federal tax credit. And I can take depreciation. Is that true?
It is.
Yeah. So you have personal solar. And this is where people get goofed up. On your personal solar, they extended. It was supposed to go down to 22%. But at the end of the year, the COVID relief bill, they extended this thing out to 26%, which is what 2020 was. You could take a 26% tax credit. And this is really important to understand. A tax credit is like cash. So it's dollar for dollar against your tax bill. A deduction lowers your income. And so it's worth whatever your tax bracket is at. So if you're at a 25% tax bracket, you get a deduction for a dollar, it's worth 25 cents. So the personal solar sits in one section, and then you have business solar in another. And I think it's 38 and 48. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's section 48 and 38. And what it says is 26% plus you can still depreciate it because it's a business asset. And that depreciation is going to be a calculation of the cost, including the setup, the installation cost minus one half of credit. So if I have a $10,000 solar system that I put up, and that's the install and the panels, then I get $2,600 tax credit, and I'm going to get a deduction. I'm just going to put a deduction here of what, $8,700?
Yes.
And this is where it gets cool. Sometimes you might be putting $2,000 down in financing $8,000 for that $10,000. So you actually end up with money in your pocket as a result of putting solar on your property. And then you're basically, you're going to recognize income because you're going to sell the energy to the tenant. So you're going to have an income and you're going to have the deduction carrying, you know, whatever the costs are. And eventually you just have a nice little extra revenue stream. And you're going to use that revenue stream, pay off whatever the credit was, whatever you borrowed. So,
and the only stipulation for when to take the credit is, well, it says when it's placed in service, but IRS really doesn't have a bright line test for that. So
10%.
You're looking at, is it generating electricity?
Mm-hmm. You could actually do the credit once it's started and you have 10% completion. So people at the end of the year, this is the only reason I know this is because all the solar guys are like, hey, if you put it in December and we get this much done, you can take the credit this year.
Now, does that work for both the principal residence and the business?
My understanding is that, yes. Okay. So there's always an energy geek that's on. I can't see them. Let me see if I could scroll through. Last time I ever give them a car that runs. That's funny. How many years do you take the solar deduction over? Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, nobody's here is a energy guy. Usually there's one energy person that's like, oh, I did this, I did that, usually. But we'll see if they surface. The deduction, because we have 168K, which is bonus depreciation, means that we could take the equipment either over 1 year or five, because it's placed in service. So you could either put it like, so if we have this credit of $8,700, we would just take it over. We'd take it over 5 years, or we'd just take it all.
Which I find to be an incredibly short timeline for something like that.
And you know what? Solar doesn't dissipate. Like the ones they were putting into service 20 years ago, I think are still out there.
Yeah.
They don't wear out, but hey, we listen to what the IRS tells us. Somebody says, hey, but didn't Toby say it was 26 cents on a dollar? No, I said, if you were at the 25% tax bracket, it's worth 25 cents on the dollar for a deduction. I was just stating the difference between a tax credit. So tax credit, I owe the IRS $5,000 and I get a tax credit for $2,600. I take $5,000 minus $2,600. The $2,600 tax credit is just like cash. So now I only owe $2,400 to the IRS. A tax deduction is the income. I have $100,000 of income, but I have a $5,000 deduction. Now I owe tax on $95,000. Yep. So that's all it is. So a big difference from, you know, how it plays out, but, you know, simple distinction. Somebody, I want to have my first child in the IRS building. You guys are horrible. There's people banging on the IRS here. The IRS is in deep doo-doo.
I tell you what, it's even hard to get through to them right now. They're so understaffed.
How about paper returns? We're still trying to dig out of like June and July. It seems like they're not even opening stuff.
And I don't think it's going to help that they've delayed the start date for e-filing so late.
Mm-hmm.
When February 13th, I believe.
February 13th. They ought to just give us until July again. Push out the individual, all the due dates that are April 15th, put it into July. 2/3 of accountants said they appreciated that last year. I don't know who the 1/3 is, but I say that we ostracize them. So here we could answer a question. Let's see, capital gains on a sold home. Wife and I married 6 months ago. She lives here. Oh, she lived here for 5 years. We had not filed taxes for 2020. If we sell personal residence and the profit is over 500,000, are we covered for 500K? Pyle, this is fun. I want to see what you're typing. But here's the rule: is the two out of five rules is I live there and it's my property; it's in my name. So you may have an issue with the was it in my name for the 2 years. Now, when you sell it, it's in your name. You're probably going to be okay. Did you live there for the previous 2 years? Yes. So I would say you're probably going to get it, but you want to just do a little verification on it. Have you ever seen that?
I have. And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it comes in between the 250 and the 500 number.
Yeah, you got to look and see what the gain is, actually. It may be a moot point, depending on how much gain you have. Paper returns are hilarious, so easy to fluff the numbers on a... What? These guys are getting... No, paper returns are just like...
Yeah, actually, that's not true because they have to enter all that information in.
They're going to take whatever you do on a paper return, they're going to stick it into a computer, and then they're going to send you letters, and they're going to say, why is it different? That's what you think. So, all right. This is how people that get into tax arguments... I'm right. And they say, send me a shiv. I'm just teasing you. I know. Hey, I know. They're always like. So they still put it in a computer. And our experience, paper returns, we had to do paper returns on almost like, shoot, like there's still states where we have to do paper returns mm-hmm. on the amendments. All right. So he's playing fun. All right. If I invested in an opportunity zone last year with capital gains, I understand the taxes are deferred until 2026. So it's treated as sold on December 31st of 2026. Are those taxed at 2020 rates or 2026 rates?
They're taxed at the 2026 rates. And the reason is you're not deferring the taxes. You're deferring the income.
Yep.
That will be taxed in 2026.
But they're going to keep their nature. So if you had short-term capital gains, it's going to be short-term capital gains, ordinary rate, whatever that might be. If it's long-term, it's going to be getting hairy for people. We'll see what the tax rates are. If what
has been 85%.
Yeah.
No, that's not.
Yeah. No, that's actually a pretty interesting issue because they're talking about making the highest tax rate 39.6% for long-term capital gains. For people who make over $1 million. If you did an opportunity zone, there's a good chance that's you. I've never really liked the opportunity zones. I know that there's people out there really pushing them and I get it. And I don't talk people out, but I'd rather have some certainty. Mm-hmm. And at least in the real estate realm, I tend to look at it and say 1031 exchange to me is a little bit better because at least I have control. And this is why is I don't have any control now. I'm recognizing all that deferred gain in that year, 90% of it at least, in 2026.
And we've seen them where they couldn't do the 1031 because they sold something other than real estate. But again, this locks up your money for a long time.
Yep, which is fine. Again, I have a feeling that the people that are going to be screaming at their accountants are going to be the really rich ones who have a lot of income. And they're going to say, wait a second, I would have paid, $200,000 per million, and now I'm going to get hit with $400,000 per million, and I got an extra 5 years, that's it. And you could say, hey, but you got an opportunity to do GameStop. No. Stonks. I was investing in my stonks. All right. I set up my medical LLC in late December. My current job had been paying me personally since April, direct deposit to my personal checking account. My latest paycheck for December's work was direct deposited to my LLC business bank account in the first week of January 2020 or 2021. I just found out my current employer reported my earnings for 2020 under my LLC. So that's their medical. So I'm going to assume that this LLC is taxed as something other than a disregarded entity. If it's disregarded entity, it's moot. If it's an S corp, we have a little bit of an issue. Dive into it.
I read into this one. I wanted to ask lots of questions. Mm-hmm. First off, was it your employer or was it somebody you were contracted with?
Mm-hmm.
Because just changing from an employer relationship to that independent contractor relationship, I think has some dramatic
I'm thinking issues. It has to be a contractor.
Beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
I thought so too, because
usually
I don't think the employer could just...
Usually doctor contracting with hospital.
Right.
And they're paying, without a doubt, a 1099. Yep. And so they're reporting it. You know, the date that it's actually set up is after the date that the earnings. So I'm looking at it going, I'm bifurcating that out. And I'm either don't know how I do it on a business. If it's all reported to the business, I would just say I took a distribution for the amount that I had received prior. And I don't think it'd make much of a difference. If I'm an S corp, I don't think I'm sitting there avoiding the self-employment tax, because you're going to lose that argument because it wasn't in existence when you earned the money.
Right.
So I might just call it a payment. Hey, paid you as a 1099. This might be the individual here. I'm applying for a second draw. I'm a sole proprietor in an Airbnb. Oh, yes. No, this isn't the exact one. So let Pyle do with that. I thought that might be our doctor.
Yeah, I think if you were a individual 1099 person and they put it in your LLC, which is taxed as an S corporation, you've probably saved yourself quite a bit of money on the self-employment taxes.
Mm-hmm. You think you could still avoid the self-employment tax in this scenario where it didn't exist? You would do it just because you're...
I would, yeah, I think I would go ahead and do it because I think the employer could claim that the checks issued to in the personal name were not correct.
Yeah, oh, I see what you're saying. So they started in April. At the very end of the year, they set up their business.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would disagree with you. maybe you're reading. I would say, I would pay it all out to the employee.
If I go back and read that very first line where they set it up in December.
Right. He was thinking the year before or something. So
yeah, that's it.
The other thing is somebody's asking about whether withholdings and things, you know, you have to assume that no, because you're not going to do withholdings on an LLC. It's going to be an employee. It's going to be an individual. So everything here is telling me it's a 1099. And then they just put instead of doing two 1099s, they're doing one 1099 for the entire amount of the year. And they just picked the latest instead of the individual's Social Security or whatever they were using.
Yeah.
They said, give me your business. So it's up to the taxpayer. The right way is to the monies that received from April to December would be to pay that as a Schedule C. And then the date that you set up the LLC, assuming it's an S corp from a tax standpoint, remember that LLCs don't exist to the IRS. You tell it how it's going to be taxed. I'm going to take a portion of that in the S corp and say, hey, great, I got some tax-free money, meaning that I don't have to pay old age, disability, survivor's insurance, or Medicare. So, yeah, if it's a single member LLC, it doesn't matter. It's moot point. Single member LLC, it's just disregarded to the individual. Then it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, if it's a single member LLC, it's not an S corporation or a corporation, I probably wouldn't do anything. It's all going to be reported in the same spot. If it is an S corporation, I think I go back to the employer and ask them to correct the 1099s.
Really? You can do that? I would just pay myself out. But depending on your relationships, go and say, hey.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Paying some of them out directly to your Schedule C.
I would just say that I paid myself Schedule C.
Gotcha.
Somebody says they messed up. Make them correct it. Easier said than done sometimes. But it's up to if it's a big bureaucracy, I'm probably just taking it. If it's a small hospital, I'd go into them and say, hey, is there any way you could break these out? Mm-hmm. They're going to look at you like you're from Mars. That's just my experience. Tax and Asset Protection Workshop, because it's so much fun to do these. We just did one on Saturday. I hope some of you guys were on it. Clint and I are probably going to do all these this year because we're yin and yang. He likes his areas. I like my areas. Mm-hmm. I like diving into the tax, and it comes off really well. So it's always fun. Somebody says, I was on Amazing Content and signed up. So we get a lot of clients doing these, but more importantly, you educate a lot of people, because this world, it's really simple. It's like there's A, B, or C, and you just have to know how to do the calculation for A, B, or C. So like, for example, on a doctor, we instinctively say S corp. The reason being is because you're probably living off of it, and you're going to save yourself about 10% if you can avoid some of the old age, death, and survivors of the Social Security tax. And you get to do an accountable plan, and you get to do a whole bunch of other tax write-offs, and you can adopt the 401k, and you could even do a defined benefit plan if you're a high income earner, and you can start really pushing some stuff into the future as far as income recognition. If you want to learn about that stuff, come to the Tax and Asset Protection Workshop. We have them coming up on February 27th. I know it's a long ways out, but plan to do it now. You do get a recording of it, so you don't have to sit there all day, although I'd recommend that you put some time aside. And what's cool is if you have other people that work with you to do it together, meaning that you have a couple people sit around and bounce the ideas off each other. Like Jeff and I could probably pick any question and we could argue over it. You think it's arguing, but we would say, well, what about this? What about this? And then we'll go look it up, you know, and find out at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what the law says. And sometimes the law is gray and we're just making the best decision we can. That's why you have tax courts. That's why you have the Supreme Court, because not everything is set out already. That's why you have revenue rulings. That's why you have the regs. That's why you have private letter rulings. These things would not exist if there was black and white in the tax world. You're doing the best you can based on the guidance, and you can choose, do I do the way that puts money in my pocket, or do I do the way that puts money in their pocket? They're both right. I just choose to do the one that keeps the money in my realm as long as humanly possible. But anyway, it's free. Go on in, ABA link, TAP227. That stands for Tax and Asset Protection 227. I always want something like two lines, really simple. February, whatever. That's why I drive my tech. Like, can we make it simpler? But anyway, you come on in. They're a lot of fun. We've been teaching them for the better part of close to 25 years. Things move all the times. There's about 800 tax law changes every year. We don't stay up on every single one. We're just looking for the relevant one for our clients. And so the Tax and AP Workshop is where you go. Do once a year, brush up. They're a lot of fun. And absolutely, go in there and keep building up that knowledge. All right, any other questions here? If you do a revocable trust and put your residence in it, do you lose your homestead benefits, lower taxes, and no protection from suits? No. If you do a revocable trust, it's the same as you from a tax standpoint, and you do not lose, there's not a single state where you lose your homestead exclusion, which is homestead exclusion in a nutshell is I sue Jeff. I want to take everything that Jeff owns. Homestead exclusion says you can take all this stuff, but you can't take the equity in my house up to a certain amount. If Jeff lives in Florida or Texas, it's unlimited.
Right.
And remember, O.J. Simpson had millions of dollars of judgments against him, multi-million. I think it's like over 60 million now. They still can't touch his house. That's a homestead. And they can't touch the NFL Players Union because there's ERISA protections. Like there's certain assets that nobody can ever take from you. And the homestead is really important. Not all states have big homesteads. Like California, it's less than 100 grand. Here, it's what, 575. All states are a little different. So there's no one size fits all on that, right? But know that putting it in a trust is not going to do away with that. If it's just a living trust, grantor trust, if it's a land trust, somebody says, can I see all the questions? Posted a question. We'll get to it. I don't share out the Q&A unless some of the answers get shared out, unless somebody is disclosing personal information, in which case then we make it invisible. Same thing on the chat is I don't want your name sitting next to something where, you know, where it could be used against you. I want you to ask questions without fear. All right. This is your favorite. I own a 501c3. No. Right. There's no shareholders in a 501c3. That's like one of the requirements, is that it can't inure to the benefit of any individual, the profits, that is. Right. And I pay my daughter with W-2. Fine. So the 501c3, whatever it's doing, is paying somebody's daughter. That individual is probably in control of the organization. This is Hillary Clinton and Chelsea. This might be Hillary. This 501c3, which this is weird, parentheses, excuse that. I just grabbed the questions. This 501c3 is tax exempt. Of course it is. Do I need to file form 941 and 940 on this? Somebody says, Toby just answered this for you. Oh, all right. There we go. Or should my daughter simply file her personal tax return using a W-2?
Well, if you're paying payroll, you have a requirement to file these reports, even if you are not withholding taxes, even if your child is a minor that's not required to have Social Security withheld on them, you still have to file these reports. And it's normally quarterly for the 941 and annually for the 940. So I prefer anytime I'm in this kind of situation to be working either with a payroll company or some kind of software that does payroll for me, because these reports are so easy to mess up. The W-2 is easy to mess up. Filing these reports is not going to have any effect on your daughter filing her return with the W-2, unless there was some withholding on that. But that should be on the W-2 also.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to do this, depending on how old your daughter is. If they're an adult and they have a business, you can pay the business and let her deal with all that stuff outside. Just contract with the business. If they're younger, or this is what they're doing, and they are an employee and you're controlling their time, then make sure that you're running it with the payroll service, like you said. Mm-hmm. We do have a payroll, limited payroll. If we're doing 4 or less a year, you could do it through Anderson. If you go do somebody, you really want something where you can just do it periodically, maybe once, twice, four times a year. If you're going to do one every other week, then you need to have what's ADP and some of these others.
ADP and paychecks. And
there's a ton out there. You can just look. Yeah, somebody says the person who owns the 501c3 needs to get some, needs to contract and make sure you're doing your books. Yeah, 501c3s are awesome, by the way. Love them. One of my favorite things in the whole world is when you start doing things where you don't pay tax, it's funny how it compounds. And I use Hershey's, I use IKEA as an example, Hughes Organization. Most of the big ones is you can't get out of the way of them once they start going. Because my experience is most people, it's a one-way street. Money's going into them. Mm-hmm. And energy and time. And if you get your family involved, it's funny how these things grow. Usually over a 3 or 4 or 5 decade time period, you're going to see substantial growth, like explosive growth. You call it exponential growth. It doesn't grow linear when you're not dealing with it. Somebody says the Clinton Foundation, they own Haiti now. You guys need to behave. They're all out there misbehaving. You're allowed to drink wine copious amounts during Tax Tuesdays. It helps. I need to start drinking more. All right. I'm selling a house that I inherited. I'm on Social Security disability. Will the sale of the house affect my status? I love the fact that they used affect.
You mean the correct word?
Yeah. the effect of the arrow affected the aardvark is the way I always remember it. The A is the, all right, anyway.
And the answer to this question is a sale of a home or really any other property that's capital gains has no effect on your Social Security disability. Same for if you're in early retirement, mm-hmm. It doesn't affect it. What does affect it is earned income, such as you've got a W-2 job or you're self-employed, mm-hmm. You have a partnership, things that are being taxed by either self-employment or withholding tax. So those will affect your disability and they will affect your early retirement income.
Yeah, so you have the SSD, which is not need-based, and it won't have any impact on that one. You have SSI, which is need-based, and the only thing that's going to impact, if you're living in the house, I don't think they look at the value of it. If you inherit a house, it may cause you to lose benefits for a little while because they have a 2000 asset limitation. So you'll have to get rid of the inheritance at some point, my understanding. But they're different worlds. There's disability and there's the SSI where you don't have the inability to work. And they're two very different things.
Now, I will throw in a caveat that when you sell, Medicare in particular is based, how much you pay is based on your taxable income, mm-hmm. your AGI. So it could affect that. It could cause you to have a year of higher premiums.
Do they? I think that is that one where they take out the passive. I think there's a couple where they say interest, dividends, capital gains, passive income. They don't.
That may be true, but I don't know.
But that's also like Social Security. If you're getting a Social Security, that's what they. I know they exclude some of these things for Social Security as well. But Social Security disability, Jeff's absolutely 100% right. It's not need-based, so it doesn't get affected by your assets. And so if you sell it, it shouldn't. If you are on need-based support, then it will have an impact on your ability to qualify for the need-based until you become needy again, which is after you sell it and deplete it, then it helps you. Somebody says about the aardvark. I think it was the effect of the arrow had an effect on the aardvark.
Yeah.
That's the one. Somebody wanted me to do that again. They're probably drinking. They just want to see us do
good. Somebody's going to say, can you do that 10 times fast? So,
I don't want to do that 10 times fast. Let's see. I participated in a tax contributions program that my employer offers. Can I convert it to a Roth IRA or Roth 401k and up to what amount? So, Dinesh, you put money into a tax contribution. I'm assuming that it's a 401k program. And the question you have is, can I convert it? So that the answer is there's no legal reason why you cannot. It's going to depend on your employer's program. So number one, does your employer allow in-service distributions? And if they do, then you could, then the next question is, do they have a Roth 401k component? Because technically you could actually put $57,000 a year into a Roth, either an IRA or a 401k, as long as you have in-service distributions. So that would be the big question. Most employers are not going to allow that. If they do not have the Roth component of the 401k and all you can do is roll it out to a Roth IRA, you could still get the same impact that you want. An in-service distribution is, I have not left the employment and I want to distribute the money out of my plan into my own plan. So Ari, usually if I work, like here at Anderson, we have a 401k. If I want to move that money in my 401k to an IRA, I need to leave employment. Like it's once you're done, once you're retired. Unless the plan says, hey, I can do an in-service distribution. Mm-hmm. So when we do solos, we always put in in-service distributions. When you have a big one, somebody says the effect of the yard sign is affected by the wind. You guys, they're all drinking. And Aardvark has two A's. These guys are killing me. I love it. Somebody says, I perked up hearing 57,000. How do you do that? I thought the max is six. Oh. So here's the rule. Can we go down that path?
Yep.
Am I late again? Nah, I only picked like 10 questions this time, so I should get to do this. All right, so here's how it works. When I put money into a 401k, I want you to think of buckets. There's three big buckets. There's a Roth bucket, and this is really, let's pretend it's 401k. So let's pretend that Jeff has a Roth bucket in front of him. And then I'm over here, and I have two buckets in front of me. One's for the employer contributions, and one's for the employee deferral. And the deferral is the employee takes their paycheck and defers it into a bucket. The employer portion is just a check from the employer that goes in, and I can deduct that up to 25%. What if I paid myself a total of $57,000 in a year, and I said to the employer, contributed that same amount into the employer deferral bucket? Are they allowed to do that, first off? And the answer is yes. Do they get a deduction? The answer is no. If I didn't even take the 25% because I'm still in the year. Let's say this was in 2021 and I just did this. You know what I could do? I could roll this from my bucket at any point into Jeff's Roth 401k bucket. Need to have the Roth bucket and I need to have in-service distributions. Did I ever take a deduction? No. So what's the tax consequence? There isn't. The money is now sitting in a Roth bucket. It was paid with after-tax dollars and 100% legal. The IRS actually tells us how to do it. We used to think that you'd better take that bucket and roll it into a Roth IRA. My recommendation is still doing that, but I could still roll that out. I just never took a deduction. I never took a deduction, but I have the amount that's payable out to me. So I simplified it and I made it really, really simple. There's probably a couple other T's to cross and I's, but that's how you put a larger amount into it. I don't see the buckets on the screen. No, I'm pretending. Like, look at my hands. There's a bucket over here. We're visualizing buckets. Yeah, kind of fun. More fun stuff because I'm trying to get done close to on time.
I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. And that was my New Year's resolution, is not to do 2 hour tax Tuesdays every time. We're supposed to do an hour. We'll see how close we come. All right. You can always follow us on all the social medias. Clint is actually really good. He actually breaks down that same strategy in a video, so you can go it. Somebody wants me to use the pen. Oh, since you say that, I can't resist drawing on things. Yeah. So if you go here, check out Clint's. Clint has a separate YouTube channel too, because he's Clint. But he does really good on the real estate side. He does more almost exclusively on the real estate side. You can go over there. Somebody says, can you do a 1031 exchange with a company like Spartan Investment Group? Jason, so Spartan does storage unit private placements. They also do RV parks and some of those types of investments. And private placement is a fancy way of saying a private investment opportunity. You can put monies into it, but it has to go name to name. So it's really, really tough to do a 1031 exchange into an investment unless they are willing to do it as a tenant in common interest. Right. If they're willing to do that, which I don't know for Spartan, I kind of doubt it, honestly, then you'd have to keep it in something else. There are some, Ryan Gibson, not, did I say Jason Gibson? Ryan Gibson, sorry, over at Spartan. Sorry, Ryan, bad Toby. So Spartan, great investments, but I don't think you're going to be able to do it. And whenever you roll out of a syndication, the problem is it has to go name to name. So the entire syndication needs to go get replacement property. And it's kind of tough. If a Lady Bird deed is used to leave a residence to an older child when the owner passes, will the child lose the tax benefit not paying on the inherited property? Do you know the answer on this one?
I don't even know what a Lady Bird deed is.
So it's usually trying to keep the property from the child so that it's not counted towards child's income, or somebody is trying to get it out of their asset base. I should go look at it. I might be mixing my ideas up. But if I make a gift or if I'm leading something, I don't think I'm going to get the step up in basis, which is what I'm thinking of it. But Barbara, what I want you to do is send that in so I can go verify that I'm thinking of the right type. Immediately start thinking of something that's going to a child after I pass, where I'm giving them a right after I occupy, but I might be thinking of the wrong thing. What if you purchased a building with solar on it already, solar installed in 2016? Any credit benefit to me as the solar panels were transferred to me with the purchase of the building? I don't think so, Jill.
No, there's... You may still be depreciating them if it's a rental property, but there's not going to be any credit. Mm-hmm. The credit's already been received by whoever installed them.
Somebody said, oh, that was way back when on this stuff. Let me see if I have some more tax questions. Could you talk more about how a Wyoming single member holding LLC is taxed as a disregarded LLC, and how do I, the owner, make money? So somebody's just asking about it real simple. So Wyoming is just a state. From a tax standpoint, single member LLC just means it's ignored. So it literally means exactly what it says. It doesn't file a tax return, files it on yours. If I want to take money out of it, it's no different than having a safe in your house. If I put assets in the safe, is there a tax implication? No. If I take tax out of the state, is there a tax, or out of the safe, is there a tax implication? No. So I can put money in, take money out. The only state where there's an issue is in Pennsylvania, and it's for real estate taxes, in which case they want to charge you a transfer tax. But from a federal tax standpoint, you don't have to worry about it. Somebody says PA sucks. I grew up outside of Philadelphia in a place called Media. And Pennsylvania for real estate, still great town, holy cow, but man, they try to hit you. They want those transfer taxes. They're like a vacuum cleaner. Can I claim bonus depreciation for light SUV business new vehicle in 2020? It was 18K. What say you, Jeff?
You can, but the bonus is going to be limited to how much you can take.
I think it's like 10,000, right?
Yeah.
There's a limitation, but it depends on how heavy it is. So it says light SUV. If it had said heavy SUV, you might have been able to claim it all. You got to be over 50% business usage, and you got to track those miles. I tend to tell people, do the mileage reimbursement. It's just, you're going to save yourself some headaches, unless it really is like the company bought it and it's only being used for business. Then maybe you do it and you have employees driving it. If it's your car and you're calling it a business vehicle, it's got to be over 50%. You got to track those miles. And it just becomes one of those things where, I don't know. Let's see. Are our guys answering a lot? I'm going to go down to the bottom here. There's a whole bunch of questions. Can I use 26% on more than one rental property on the solar? Yes. I have three rentals that I want to put it on. Can I use them? Yes. And it's just tax credit. So if I put $50,000, I get a 26% of that. So I get a $13,000 deduction. And then I also get to write off. And somebody said, what are the deduction? I thought that there was a limitation on the deduction. There is. You take $13,000 off the $50,000 and you deduct the $37,000? Yeah, half of 26. So that would be, half of 20 is 13. So if I put a $50,000
The depreciation would be on half.
On half. So it'd be 13,000. So it would be 6,500. So I would get a $43,500 deduction that I could take either over 5 years or over in 1 year. They're tasty, guys. I'm telling you that there's a few things out there where it's like the juice is worth the squeeze, right? Oh, that's where Don, I didn't know, Sherry, that Don grew up media. Yeah, that's where I lived till the Phillies won the World Series. And I think it was 81. We moved out west. So Tug McGraw, Bake McBride, Larry Boa, Pete Rose, who I just saw. He was down at the Blind Pig and off the strip. All right. Go down tangents about Philadelphia. Easy. All right. Here's your favorite question. As soon as I saw outside inside basis, I said Jeff would probably eat this up. How does a partner report outside basis on a tax return? For example, a surviving spouse gets the stepped up basis of her deceased spouse partnership interest in a general partnership. The surviving spouse's basis is higher stepped up than the other partners in the partnership.
That's all correct.
Yep.
Oh, you want more than that? What this is a 754. That's a code section. The 754 step up in basis. It also has to do with section 743.
What is basis?
Basis is your cost in an asset.
So is there inside basis and outside basis?
There is inside basis and outside basis. Inside basis, this does always confuse me because it's a completely opposite of the way I thought it would go. Mm-hmm. Inside basis is your basis in an investment. Outside basis is your basis inside the partnership, which just doesn't make sense to
me. All right. So if I put $100,000 in a partnership, mm-hmm. and then that partnership invests in a building, mm-hmm. and it has a basis in the building, my basis in the partnership is $100,000. My basis in the building is whatever that basis is, my yeah. proportion of it. Okay.
And how you get different basis, the prime way of doing this is like buying another partner's interest or mm-hmm. something like that. So you're still going to have a basis that's assets inside the partnership, but you're also going to have what you pay. If they put another asset or maybe multiple assets on the books, that is just for you. It's depreciation just for you for that increase in fair market value.
Mm-hmm.
The other partners don't share in that. Only that specific person who inherited the interest gets it.
Mm-hmm. So let's go through this then. When somebody passes away, their surviving spouse, and it depends on the state in which you live.
Right.
If you're in a community property state, your basis on all of your capital assets are going to step up to the fair market value on the date of passing. The easiest way to make sure you do this is to put it in a living trust so that you never have to worry. Or depending on the state where you live, they may have the ability to hold it as community property. I learned this on one of these, actually. Somebody was telling me the right answer, and I was like, being a dummy. You can do that like in California. They have holding it as community property. So there's the ability to, on how you hold it, as to whether you'll get the step up. Otherwise, if I'm separate property and my spouse owns an individual interest, I don't think the whole thing's stepping up. I think just their portion is going to step up.
Just their portion of the assets, correct.
If we're in a community property state and we own it together, the entire basis steps up when one spouse passes.
So this is where the step up you get from the spouse dying, like you would for any asset, that is a step up in your inside basis. The increase in value, say you have a property that inside the partnership is $100,000 value, but when you inherit it, it's now $150,000. You're going to get a step on your portion
of that
$50,000.
Right. You're going to get a portion of that. Yeah, this gets weird. People are always like, basis, baseball, basis. I'm saying a bunch of people said baseball, basis. Basis, B-A-S-I-S. And it just means, from a tax standpoint, what do I have to pay gain on? And so if I have, and whether I have taxation when I receive monies from it. So for example, Jeff and I go into a syndication together and I put in 100,000, Jeff puts in 100,000. We take that, we buy $1 million building and then we pull out $800,000. Let's say that we buy $1 million building and it goes up to 2 million. And so we started off by taking our 200, getting a loan for 80% mm-hmm. for 800,000. Now it's worth 2 million. So we take out an additional $500,000 and we take it and we distribute it out to ourselves. This is where your outside basis, you have to know it. And somebody says, what's a syndication? It's just, we're investing together. So we're in a LLC together. My basis and Jeff's basis under the facts I just gave you is 100,000. And then did we increase our basis when we got the loans? If we are not personally obligated on those loans, we did not, which means if I receive money in excess of my basis, I'm going to have to pay tax on it. So let's say that we took 100,000 out, or we took 500,000. So we each took 250. The 100,000 that's our basis, we can take back out always tax-free. And then with the additional 150 might be taxable. And it might be taxable as long-term capital gains if we don't have adequate basis to take that money. How do you increase your basis? You're on the hook. You're personally guaranteeing that loan. Mm-hmm. Now my basis goes up in a partnership.
One thing I will say about in a situation such as this one, inherited partnership interest and all, you want to make sure that whoever is preparing your partnership tax return knows what the heck they're doing. Reputable CPA, because this can get extremely screwed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody says personally obligated is personally guaranteed. Yep. And it will say on the new K-1s, it'll say whether it's guaranteed. What do they call it? Whether you're...
Recourse
or non-recourse.
There's also, if a mortgage is securing a property, even though the partners aren't personally liable, that is called qualified non-recourse financing, and that adds to your basis.
That can, even if you're not on the hook for it.
Even if you're not on the hook.
What if I'm passive?
It's still going to give you basis. So that's going to be your at-risk versus your passive loss issues.
So if I am a doctor, I put $100,000 in, and they go, and as it's going up, they go get a big loan and distribute it out to everybody. My basis isn't going up, is it?
No. Well, it depends if it's being secured by real estate.
If it's the real estate, yes. Then potentially?
Getting loans to divvy out to your partners is a problem all in itself, because now you're talking about debt financed distributions.
Yep. And if I'm on the hook, then I'm okay. But if I'm not on the hook, then I'm not. All right. Somebody says two equal. Oh, here, I'm not going to go that. I'll go backwards just for a second. Oh, shoot. Maybe I'll go forward. I'm going to wait on that. I was going to read a question, but I thought we were farther along than we were. All right. 401k CARES Act distribution. So follow me along here, guys, just for a quick second. So somebody last year, a little over a month ago, they said to their employer, hey, I hear that I can get early distribution under the CARES Act from my fill in the blank, 401k, IRA, 457, 403b, whatever it is. And I don't have to pay early withdrawal penalties. Can I get some money? So they said at the very end of the year, I want $100,000. And then the employer says, okay, and they write a check, but it took 2 weeks to get that check cut. So they send them a check. You take that check and that individual deposit it on 1/14/2021. So just a couple weeks ago. Do I report the CARES Act funds on my 2020 return or my 2021 return? Jeff?
You would report this on your 2021 return because that's when you received the check for it.
It's date of receipt on these ones.
Right. It's date of receipt, which would be January 12th. So let's say, for example, you received it on December 31st, but you didn't cash it till January 1st. Then it's received in December 31st.
Mm-hmm. If I write a check to a charity, for example, under the same scenario, they approved it, but it would be the date that the check was cut. So if there's a date on it for 12/31, then even though I deposited into the nonprofit 2 weeks later, I'd still get a charitable deduction. But that's not the rule here. The rule here is date of receipt. There are some exceptions, I believe, to try to push it back, but I don't think it's going to matter. So for this individual, at the very end of the year, on 12/22, I believe it was, Congress passed this other COVID act where they extended, I believe it's for 180 days, the early withdrawal of $100,000 cumulatively of $100,000 if you're in a national disaster area. And I believe that we're all, if you have shutdowns, you're in a national disaster area from COVID. So you should be okay if the reason that you were asking for the CARES Act distribution is because you were impacted. The rules shifted slightly. It used to be to say it was because of COVID. Now I believe you actually have to be in an area, but I believe the entire United States is still covered. And under that situation, it behooves you to have it recognized in 2021 because you're taking that income and recognizing it over 3 years. You could choose to recognize it in 2021, but you could spread it out over 2021, 2022, and 2023. And so long as you pay it back before the end of the third year, you don't have to pay tax on it at all. And you can amend your previous returns and get that money, the tax money back. But you never have the penalty ever, period. So don't fret, whoever sent this in, it may be okay. I think it's 2021. I wouldn't fight it. If they didn't extend that, I'd be fighting it. And I'd be trying to find a reason to have it classified under 2020. All right, a few other questions. Can my cash basis S-Corp deduct the amount paid for inventory on hand at the at year end?
No, and primarily because of what you said, it is inventory on hand. You need to report that as an asset on your books.
And the way you always look at it is you're always doing inventory beginning of the year or end of year inventory. You're just whatever amount you purchased, and then you subtract end of year inventory from beginning of year inventory and add that to it. And that's your deduction for the year. That's the way I always learned it.
Yeah, if it's stuff like office supplies or small supply inventory, stuff like that, you can usually deduct that. But if it's inventory that you're reselling, you're not going to be able to deduct that.
Somebody says, if I take a non-recourse loan against my fully paid for rental property, can I deduct interest on the loan from rental income and use the funds for whatever I want?
It's not going to be deductible on that rental property because it wasn't used on that rental property. So if you may be buying another property where, and that's where it would be deductible. I think if you're just doing it to pay yourself out, that's going to be an issue. It then becomes a personal loan secured by a rental property.
Yeah. So it always comes down to the question is the use of the funds. If you're using it to have a big old party and pay for kids' college and stuff like that, you're going to have to find the other ways to write off that interest. If you're using it for more, like, so this is what usually happens. I have my personal bucket of money and I have my business bucket of money. I'm using up all this money on my businesses and then I pull this out because I need to fill up my personal bucket. You're going to be writing off all the interest over here anyway. So the classic example is if I use a HELOC against my home and I use it to do my investments, my investment properties, I can't write it off as mortgage interest deduction anymore because under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, it has to be acquisition indebtedness or used improvement on that property. But I used it over here to acquire more rental properties. I can now deduct that interest. And it kind of, you're just kind of looking at it. So if all I'm doing is filling up this bucket at the end of the day, I'm going to get to write off that interest. The question is, which way is best for you? And that's why you sit down with your accountant and say, all right, what's the interest over here? What's the interest over here? Which one's better? You don't want to be using personal, high interest personal debt for personal expenses because you can never write them off. If you're doing that, use that high interest to buy business and like again, properties or something else that's business related so you can write off that interest on the business. Fair?
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. There's a whole bunch of really good questions. I don't want to keep going too long since we're already over. Are all credits of equal? Yeah, credits are equal in value because it's your tax dollars. So I'll put it this way. Jeff and I each have taxable income. Jeff may make twice as much as me, and he's paying a higher tax rate. End of the day, his taxes come down to a dollar amount. So Jeff may owe $30,000. I may owe $20,000. $100 tax credit is worth the same to us.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to lower his tax bill with that $100. I'm going to lower it with mine. So tax credits are worth the same no matter to whom. That's why they're so valuable. It's because, hey, you know, if you don't owe any taxes, the tax credit, depending on whether it's refundable or non-refundable, if it's refundable, then I get a check from the government, like the earned income tax credit. Those guys get, some of those people are actually getting a check from the government for, you know, for their kids. Maybe, you know, somebody else, there might be a tax credit where it's not. Somebody says, Jeff Bezos stepped down. Yeah. Brother works for Amazon. I'm interested to hear what he says. You see that?
And his ex-wife is just giving money away like crazy.
She is being a philanthropist.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
She's got billions. Philanthropist. Hey, I never have problems with people that give money away. I don't care how rich you are. Do you give discounts for the Rudy? You should talk to us. Have a Patty reach out to you. I know Rudy. He's awesome. Awesome client. Great. It's funny how that world works. Rudy Kusma, he does the just top-notch agent in Southern California. Great folks. Great folks. But he came through Crystal. You know Crystal.
I know everybody Crystal.
Yeah, it's funny how the world works. You know, somebody that you've known for 20 years and you realize all the people that they introduced to you. Crystal's awesome too. All right. So are there any other ones that we want to hit? I don't think so. I think you guys have been punished enough for today. Hey, you go to our YouTube, look for our greatest hits. We're going to have stuff coming out. Oh, wait, I have another question. Maybe two. Good. So we haven't punished them enough for today. Good. All right. I have a single family home. This is good. I have a single family home I bought as a primary residence in 2019. In 2020, I rented it out. In 2019, there were legal fees, closing costs. Can I now claim these fees as improvements to raise my cost basis? I have other rentals that I've had all these years and I never claimed their closing costs. How can I ever claim to this and add it to my basis?
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. You've heard us talk about change of accounting method numerous times. This ain't that. This is what they call a change in estimate. You mm-hmm. just adjust the numbers on your depreciation schedule and go forward with life. There's nothing to go back, amend, or from prior years. You just correct it in the current year and move forward. And yes, you should add these closing costs. If they're not already included in your basis, you need to add them in.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the beautiful part. With the way that depreciation works, it's a may depreciate it. You may write it off. It's not a you have to. So they oftentimes just leave it to you. And if you don't know any better, you don't take that as and add it to your basis. But the dirty secret is they can add it back in and make you pay tax and recapture on it if you never wrote it off. Mm-hmm. It gets ugly. And so, you know, so you go to sell and the next thing you know, you're getting this recapture on something you never wrote off. So you want to make sure that you're taking that and you want to catch up, right? I didn't know if you'd have said this, but if you had it for 6 years, you would actually catch up and take all the depreciation in the previous years. It's kind of like a cost segregation in a way. You're just grabbing all the stuff that you should have been writing off. So for this individual who wrote this in, you definitely want to go back because that gets added in. The only type of stuff you get to deduct immediately is points and closing, like the loan costs.
Yeah.
So otherwise, legal gets added into basis 100% of the time. You got to make sure that you're doing that. These guys all thought I was about to stop. I was just checking to see if you guys were sleeping.
We fooled you.
Yeah. No, I was like, gosh, I think it's at the end of this. I'm not used to my own slides anymore. All right. I bought a house in 1998. So this is a really good one. Lived in it for 2 years, then moved, and I turned the house into a rental. I wish I knew what I know now. So basically, they're saying, hey, this 121 exclusion, this the capital gain exclusion when you sell a house. Maybe they wish they had sold it. I rented it out for 20 years and then moved back in it as my primary residence. What is my tax situation?
What you need to do is you need to live in it for 2 years, starting from when you move back into it.
The rule is actually funky.
Is it?
Right.
Correct me on this.
This is weird. So it's qualified. So there's qualified use and non-qualified use.
Right.
In non-qualified use, what they do is they say, if it was in the last 5 years, non-qualified use, throw it out the door. As long as you lived in it two of the last 5 years, you're okay. If it's prior, then you take the entire length of ownership. So you bought this in 1998. Actually, I'm going to have to draw this up because I'll lose my mind. So we take.
I had to do one of these and it wasn't simple.
No, it's kind of weird. So you take the total year. So this is 1998 and we're in the year 2021, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll just say 2020, right? So we have 22 years. How much of that time was non-qualified use? So you lived in it for two. And then you had 20 years. So you'd have 2022, and you're going to get a proportionality. I can never remember whether it's 20 goes into 22 or 22 goes into it. It's basically whatever that is. It's you're going to get, what is that? Divide both by two. So 1.21, whatever is 0.2, you're going to get of the capital gain. So it's a proportionality deal. So then you look at your total capital gains. So if I sold it, so let's say I bought the house for $200,000 and now we're way in the future and we sell it for $500,000. you have $300,000 of gain. And what portion of that is eligible for qualified use would be the, basically, it's not even 10%. So it's going to be a fraction. So what is that? Let me just see whether this actually, is it 22 divided by?
It'd be like 4%.
Yeah, 22 divided by 20. No, 20 divided by 22. No, it's less than 1%, 0.9. So it depends on, they say they rented it out for, so they lived in it until 2000, and they rented it out for 20 years, means they just moved back. So it was 2 out of 22 years, it's 0.9. So you'd take the 0.9 and multiply it by that 300,000. I know this is funky, guys, but you would do this, 0.9 times 300,000. So you get what, 2,700, and that's the proportion of the gain that you can exclude. So it means you're paying tax on the vast majority of it. Kind of sucks. So that's how you actually do it. So what ends up happening is the longer you had it as non-qualified use, you'd have all that depreciation and everything else. What I probably would say to you is you need to not sell the house and try to use the 121 exclusion. If you move this back into personal property, you're going to have issues when you sell it. You're not going to get to exclude the gain.
Well, another thing I thought about is if he's running it for 20 years, this house is mostly depreciated. He's going to have very little basis left.
So he's been writing it off.
Right.
So what you do in this scenario is you 1031 exchange this, or you're going to have massive depreciation. I know somebody says, but he moved back in. The worst thing you could have done is move back in.
Yeah.
So the best thing you could do is not sell it, sit on it, wait for it to, when you pass away, your basis is, you're going to step up and whoever gets it is going to have a reset button. If you're going to sell it, move out, make it into a lease, and then sell it as a 1031. And Julia says, I thought he should move back in 2 of the last 5 years. Aha, but they stuck in that little time bomb in the code that says non-qualified use. And if you go in and look, check out all the examples they give you. They're almost all like this, where somebody had it for a rental for 10 years, moved into it, thought they could live in it for 2 years and then avoid all the gain. Mm-mm. It's proportionate. So if it's in the last 5 years, like, hey, I had it as a rental and I moved into it and I lived in it and then sold it, and it was in that 5-year stretch, so I lived in it, rented it for 3 years, then sold it, it doesn't matter if it was in that last 5-year stretch. But if I rented it, then moved in, I have to be worried about it. And yeah, they're going to look back and they're going to say non-qualified use. So they take a look and say the last date that you lived in it, and if it's within that 5-year period, you're okay. If it's beyond that and I had rental and then I had lived in it, then we have to be very careful. And don't worry, we can always do the numbers before you sell to make sure. But like Jeff said, it's not easy. I think I'm right on this, that it's 2,700. Like if you had like $2 million worth of gain.
It's actually 27,000.
Is it 27,000?
It's 9%, not 0.9%.
Oh, is it 9%? Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, one.
Still not a lot when you're considering $400,000 a gain.
Yeah, so it's 1.2 goes into 1 about 9 times. Yeah, you're right. So it's 27,000. All right. So the point is that
I just wanted to point that out before they did.
Well, what they do is you guys are supposed to be doing the math. So I do attorney math. I add zeros to things and say it's more. The reason that I bring this up again is cuz there's a misnomer that it's a proportionality of the 250,000 exclusion or the 500 exclusion. Not so. So if this was a $3 million gain and you were single, you'd get the entire capital gain exclusion, but it's not. You get a proportion of the actual use and you end up doing that. What if it was a rental in an entity and then he rented it from his entity to live in? He might find it. Oh my God, Ari, stop doing that. I might find a lawyer to backdate. No, because it's still self-use. It's not going to help. What we care about is, did you live in it as your primary residence? What is the use of it? What we care about is it an investment property? If it is, we can always 1031 exchange investment property. The great example is I've been living in a house. It went up in value, $2 million. I had this capital gain exclusion. how do I avoid tax on it? You convert it into an investment property and I can 1031 exchange it because I'm just rolling my basis. It's not like I'm stepping up. Mm-hmm. Even in that scenario, if I meet the requirements of 121, I'm stepping up my basis for whatever my capital gain exclusion is. So again, I have a house. I lived in it for 10 years. It went up in value $1 million. I may say it's me and my spouse. So I have a $500,000 exclusion. I make it into an investment property. I sell it for that million. I'm going to get, my basis is going to step up to whatever I paid for it. So let's say it's 250 plus the 500,000. So now I have $750,000 exclusion or new basis. I'm only going to have to worry about $250,000 that I'm rolling under the 1031 into the new property. So anyway, lots of fun stuff. Now I think we're getting pretty good. I think we're through the questions now. Whew, right? What if you lived in it 5 years and made it a rental and moved back for 5 years? You still have to look at the total qualified non-use. So if that guy had it for 20 years, then the more years you live in it, the higher the percentage goes up, right? So you just live in it. What if I never live in the property, rent it out for the first 10 years, then move in as a primary residence? Would I still have to apportion? Yes, that's the precise situation that 121 is trying to address. Is they're saying, hey, you're trying to get a big tax benefit. We're not going to let it happen. Does 1031 exchange into another investment property, or can you get a primary residence? So Julia, you go 1031 exchange. Great question. First off, is you go investment property to investment property, but then I could make that into a primary residence after I establish that it's an investment property. So if I sell an investment property, buy a new investment property, wait 6 months, and then move into it, I'm okay. What I can't do is sell an investment property, buy a primary residence, move in. And then 121 even addresses this. They say, if you 1031 within 5 years, we have a waiting period. So I can't do this 1031, make it my primary residence, and then do a 121 exclusion when it pops up in value, and then do it again 2 years later. You have to wait 5 years if it's a 1031 exchange. So I know I threw a lot at you. Only 6 months, okay. Technically, you don't have to have somebody live in it at all as long as you made it available for rent. There's actually a case where they made it available for rent. What we say is make sure that you're establishing it. So, you know, if you're nervous, Nelly, do it for a year. Otherwise, it's pretty clearly an investment property if you rent it to somebody and they move in for 6 months. It's no longer a personal residence, that's for sure. What if we buy a second home, summer cottage home, and rent out your house for 6 months and then come back? Is it still our primary residence, or do we lose our exclusion? So it's actually a month test. So it's 60 months. So 24 of 60 months has to be your primary residence. So you don't lose your exclusion. You just have to be careful of whether you hit 24 of the last 60 months.
And the months don't have to be consecutive.
They do. Yeah, exactly. So you could live in it for 6 months, rent it for 6 months, live in it for 6 months, rent it for 6 months, live in it for 6 months, rent it for 6 months. You now have 24 months of the last, whatever it is, 48 months. You could sell it and still do it. Somebody's saying to somebody, we answered a question and they don't see it. All right, so they're dealing with that. You guys are awesome. Lots of questions asked. 157 questions asked that I could see. There's still some open questions. So what I'm going to do is, some of these are just comments. So we'll get rid of some of those. Guys, we'll still go through your questions and make sure. But I'm going to say, did a good job today. Did you enjoy this?
This is great.
All right. So people are used to just sitting here doing these without having to see our face. Hey, if you like these, you can always go back and listen to previous ones. The questions are usually pretty well laid out there, but you see we answer a lot of questions that pop in via chat too. So it's just one of those things. I would just suggest that you just say, hey, I'm going to do some mind food once in a while you're driving. It's not too bad. You can listen to it. A bunch of our guys do. And I tell you what, there's always questions that we don't know the answers to. And so if that's you, you're oftentimes going to have us say, hey, we're going to have to research it. The tax laws are nuanced and they're ever changing. So it's not an ego thing. It's just usually we can get you a pretty good pointed in the right direction. Sometimes we have to take a look at it. If you have a personal situation, then you're going to have to be platinum or a client for us to take it on and answer some pretty extensive. If it's just basic questions, we just answer them at no cost. But anyway, go on in and listen to the podcast. If you like the Platinum, or if you like the replays, you can also listen to them if you're a Platinum client. Platinum's a whopping $35 a month. If you're not a Platinum client with Anderson, you should be. It's unlimited Q&A. You can get on the phone with our attorneys and our advisors. If you want to become a tax client, that's a separate retention, but you can still ask tax questions even via the Platinum portal. Something, if you're the guy who took Nancy Pelosi's lectern, can you write off your legal fees? No. If you did that, we're going to say shame on you. Don't steal the lecterns. It's not yours. Put it down. All right. Questions, Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. Feel free to always send them in and visit Anderson Advisors. There's always a ton of free information up there. Plus, you could see when our events are coming up. Again, we have a lot of different classes. We like to teach. And if you are in the mood for learning some new skills, by all means, jump on. If nothing else, Jeff, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.